I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you. Because you're mine, I walk the line. As sure as night is dark and day is light, I keep you on my mind both day and night.
All right, and welcome back to our Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Excuse me. For those of you who are just joining us, Sandy Williams is here, my co-host. And Sandy, you selected the music again. Why?
Yeah, Johnny Cash. He's got the timbre to his voice that matches my mood today. And I like the message in his songs. We all walk the line. We're all walking the line. Before the break, you were reading some.
Sandy, let me do this before we let you respond. So the question, I guess, Sandy, I want to ask is the isolationist theory that is being, pushed by, former President Donald Trump and now J.D. Vance and people excited about the fact that these two people are going to do what is necessary to bring America back to where she once was.
Your question, I think, related to, America first. What does that mean? Well,
yes.
Now we're beginning to, it's like one of these paintings that you paint by number and you color it in, you try and figure it out, because America first was like a bit like make America great again. What does it mean? Well, in terms of what Donald Trump has done, it has meant erecting significant tariffs to try to partition America off, to create fences around America, to create what he says will be an influx of new jobs as a result. But it turns out the tariff policy is highly inflationary, okay? When you erect tariffs, the price of goods go up. Americans pay a tax not only for the things that are tariffed, but for all of the increased prices. And it's American consumers that pay the tariff tax. The price goes up, and all economic studies have shown that the vast significant portion of all tariffs get paid by consumers, not by the manufacturers, the foreign manufacturers, on whose goods the tariff is levied. So Trump wants to implement tariffs, and J.D. Vance is a newcomer to this, but he's also a tariff lover, okay? And when you look at the economists and the various schools of economic theory, the smallest school of economic theory favors tariffs. The largest school of economic theory says that tariffs are exceedingly troublesome. They're inflationary. They isolate our economy from the rest of the world. They diminish competition and the power of competition to reduce prices. They reduce the overall growth rate of the world and the growth rate of even the country that's putting the tariffs on in the long run. So tariffs can look attractive in the short run, but the easiest war in the world to have is a tariff war. When we put tariffs on European products, you can bet your bottom dollar they'll put a corresponding tariff on American products, and we will become increasingly isolated. Which economies in the world are growing rapidly in terms of the consumption economies? I can tell you one that isn't: the United States economy. The United States corporations that have experienced great growth, most of that growth has been experienced through exports to foreign countries. It's foreign countries that are growing rapidly in terms of their demand for American products. The second thing that seems to come from the put America first theory is isolationism from the standpoint of foreign policy. Isolate ourselves from NATO. The talk that Trump, 2025, Trump and now J.D. Vance is that we should retreat from NATO. Project 2025 suggests that the U.S. involvement with NATO would simply be to offer our nuclear deterrence, but to leave all the footwork to the Europeans themselves. So we want to isolate ourselves from Europe. Ukraine becomes a non-problem. Both J.D. Vance and Trump have suggested that as far as they're concerned, we're not concerned with the outcome in Ukraine. It's not a matter of critical interest. I happen to agree that going into this, I didn't think it was a matter of critical interest for us, but pulling the plug at this point and this juncture in the war is obviously a dramatic move, and it's clearly something that would come from a Trump-Vance presidency. The second thing both of them want to do, apparently, is ignite a significant Cold War with China and to focus a great deal of our attention on China so that this isolationism, unlike the one that Robert Taft, who incidentally was from Ohio and a part of Ohio close to where J.D. Vance is from, Robert Taft wanted to be an isolationist so we wouldn't spend a whole lot of money on our defense and defense budget. But this form of isolationism that's being talked about includes massive increases in expenditures for defense so that we can arm up to deal with the Cold War that we would apparently get into with China.
You know, Sandy, I don't know, before we go to the phone lines, I don't know if the American people really understand that all this isolationist talk, they fail to understand we only make up 4% of the globe and as a nation. And so the only way that this could matter is if we hide behind our nukes. Because if we only make up 4% of the global population and we're completely isolated alone, the only thing that can protect us is our nukes.
Well, the Atlantic and the Pacific have afforded us great protection and would continue to. And the notion that anyone wants to attack America and try to secure an advantage by occupying America is kind of crazy. Okay, yeah. That's not going to happen.
Well, no one nation can do that.
But our isolationism... The response to the Eisenhower presidency was to form NATO. NATO has kept the peace in Europe for a long, long time, much longer than had ever been experienced before. The great wars of the world had all been started in Europe between European countries before the formation of NATO, and they were happening every 50 years or 40 years or 30 years. And so, you know, NATO has been a very important entity. Furthermore, part of Project 2025 is that the United States wants to be the arsenal for democracy. We want to continue to sell weapons to everyone else, apparently, but we want to isolate ourselves from them in many other ways. The whole time I've been in the show, I've never been willing to predict a recession. I firmly predict that a Donald Trump presidency, if he implements the tariff policies he's talking about, will result in a significant inflation and a recession.
All right, let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Earl, Sandy. Yeah, I got to agree with Sandy there. One of the things that, America was founded on the principle of taxation with representation. Well, tariffs are when the rich don't pay taxes. They basically force, it's like what the Republicans are pushing right now with the universal sales tax, that all the average people would pay like 30% sales tax on everything, and that's how we would fund the U.S. government, and that we wouldn't bother with income tax. Everything would have a 30% sales tax on it, and that would go to the feds. And so that's the way that the super rich are avoiding taxes and passing it off on the little people. So tariffs are just another way of division. Blame this country, blame that country. And the other thing I was going to raise, and this gets into Donald Trump's income stream, when he started putting together his Trump Towers and his casinos and his organized crime hideouts, if you paid attention to many of his Trump Towers, they're filled with mobsters. I think there's one down in Florida that's got 60% of the tenants are Russian mobsters. And so currency speculators are a big part of Donald Trump's income stream. And currency speculators are the people who praise a country for a while, praise it, And then when the currency exchange rate gets to the right point, they'll curse a country and curse a country. So it's like on the stock market, they call it pump and dump. And it's not pumping and dumping companies in this case, it's pumping and dumping countries. So whole nations all of a sudden get devalued or revalued. And so when you get into a tariff world, you're dealing with currency speculators who have no loyalty to the country. They only have loyalty to them making profits on the back of the nations. And when you look at minerals, you look at farmers, you look at people who deal in the real world, if the price of a grain gets bounced around on the Chicago Board of Trade, that's one thing. But if somebody decides to all of a sudden change the exchange rate for the entire nation, then everything gets devalued or revalued. So the price of your house, the price of your boat, the price of your shoes all of a sudden gets revalued by 20 or 30%. And that's what caused the world wars in Europe years ago.
Hey, David, thank you very much for that information. Sandy, you?
Well, yeah, tariffs going all the way back to the 1700s. Tariffs have been the source of friction between countries because tariffs are designed to compartmentalize economies and to fence out people and to put them into dire situations. We put an embargo tariff on the oil for Japan before World War II, an embargo and tariffs and export restrictions. And that kind of thing leads to warfare.
You know, the long-term tariffs on Tehran.
Well, sanctions.
Sanctions.
Sanctions are another thing, and
right.
Sanctions that we can talk about after the break, but they're beginning to threaten the dollar, too.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat," and I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key sat watching it write and say, 'Can you see?' And it got a bad rip in New Orleans with Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seams. And it almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though."
All right. Welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. If you're just joining us, it's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, your thoughts on the music?
Johnny Cash, the message there was pretty clear. You know, we're all patriots, and we don't want our flag to be a raggedy old flag, but it's gone through a lot. We're going to go through some more.
All right, let's go to David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I'd be more than happy to share this link with you, Sandy, today. If you go to the whitehouse.gov website, from May 14th of this year, the Biden administration made clear, and not sure if you're aware of this, but he imposed severe tariffs on China starting already on this year.
No, I'm aware. I'm definitely aware that Biden has imposed tariffs. I don't agree with them either. you know, I'm not a partisan. I choose to make my own mind up, and you know, I think that tariff policy initiated under Trump has been continued. Once you have tariffs, the companies in the United States that are protected by them get very used to them and get used to the situation that's created by them. They breed themselves. It's hard to get rid of tariffs. It's hard because the pain is felt by a certain sector of America that usually has representatives on K Street. So anyway, it's interesting, but I'm fully aware of it.
All right. Well, I guess what I would point out to you, what I was going to make the statement was in regards with like semiconductors, he's raising the tariffs on semiconductors 25% to 50%. And steel and aluminum, it's going from 0% to 7.5% to 25% this year. He has Chinese batteries going from 50% to 100% tariffs.
I know this is you're talking about Biden policies. So yeah. I guess those who cheer for Trump should cheer for Biden with respect to these policies if they cheer on those policies. But like I said, I'm sort of a purist intellectually on this stuff, and you know, there are tariffs that are appropriate, the ones that are done for the purpose of national defense and security, and restrictions or tariffs, for instance, on semiconductors. I can understand that. That's a policy I could buy into. We have a serious need to have semiconductor manufacturing capacity in the United States, and I guess tariffs are one way to move in that direction. But tariffs have not resulted in a great influx of manufacturing jobs in the United States. There have been some successes during the Biden years, but Trump's years did not result in an increase in significant manufacturing jobs.
But what it did do, though, was it did diminish the manufacturing abilities of China, where they have moved out to surrounding countries.
Well, that,
to Taiwan,
if
to
Malaysia.
If
our policy is dog in the manger that we want to defeat China, okay, I'm not sure that was the reason. I think an unintended consequence of the tariffs on China was that all the jobs moved to other countries. And we're left with the inflationary effect of the tariffs without necessarily having derived any benefit from them in that case, like manufacturing jobs.
Well, I think there has been some benefit, though, that all the eggs are not in one basket. That China was basically controlling a good chunk of the supply chain, and that has been now, I guess, in my opinion, has been more diversified. Maybe you're correct that it hasn't brought the jobs like it should have over here to America, but it has caused more disruption in China's economy as well, where, again, it's beneficial to have trading partners that, you know, the other countries in the world are getting an opportunity to get some of the money that's being spent.
Well, one last point about your mention of the damage it does to the Chinese economy. I would point out that Wall Street has been very worried about the Chinese economy going south, and that the world economy has been very much premised on the strength of the Chinese economy, so that doing damage to the Chinese economy directly and purposefully might have been like shooting toes off our feet in terms of economic impacts, at least. So, you know, I think this whole world is a lot more complex than we talk about it politically.
Them. Yeah, us against them.
And it's not us against them so very clearly, exactly. And I think us against them in the world doesn't work any better than us against them in the United States, if that's the way we choose to think.
All right, let's go to Mike again. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly, thank you. I wanted to, this is a J.D. Vance comment. You know, I wanted to look at him, look at his history, and you know, he's a prime investor in Rumble, which is a hard right social media site that our U.S. intelligence has said they're basically just echoing Russian talking points over and over and over. What's important, I think, when we're talking about 2025 and selling off the Boundary Waters or Northern Wisconsin or some other public assets, that's exactly what happened in the Soviet Union when they fell apart and they needed to recapitalize. They recruited all these donors. They created their pay-to-play system. So you donate a bunch of money, you're going to get a little piece of the pie. And that's how this thing grew into this oligarchy situation, if you will, because they took the public assets and they privatized them as long, and they awarded the contracts to people that would kick them back. So that's what we've seen in history. We know that the business model is alive and well today, and we can sure as hell believe that that's what it's going to look like in 5 and 10 years if they gain the White House. The public assets are going to be gone.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is my co-host. On the other side, this missile draws new scrutiny to Judge Cannon's handling of the Trump case. We're going to talk a little bit about the fact that, you know, we've been waiting, people have been waiting for the outcome of this particular case, and now, you know, it's come in. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you.
So we raise her up every morning. We take her down every night. We don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her upright. On second thought, I do like to brag, 'cause I'm mighty proud. Crops are all in, and the peaches are rotten. The oranges are packed in the creosote dumps. They're flying them back to the Mexican border to save all their money, then wade back again.
My father's own father, he waded that river. Others before him have done just the same. They died in the hills, and they died in the valleys. Some went to heaven without any name.
All right, welcome back.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you.
All right, welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, the selection of the music.
Johnny Cash. And that message was kind of unique. It was all about immigrant labor and them being deported. So it was pretty poignant, I thought.
U.S. District Judge Aileen M. Cannon, an appointee of President Donald Trump with relatively little experience on the bench, has been under intense scrutiny since she was selected to preside over Trump's criminal trial for allegedly illegally retaining classified documents and obstructing government efforts to retrieve them. She has been praised by Republicans, denounced by Democrats, and second-guessed at almost every turn by legal experts. The clamor turned deafening Monday when the federal judge in Florida tossed the high-profile case in a bombshell move hours before Trump officially became his party's presidential nominee. Sandy, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, Clarence Thomas gave her a broad hint in the concurring opinion that he wrote a couple of weeks ago in the immunity decision by the Supreme Court. He, in a concurring opinion, said, you know, in his mind, there was a substantial constitutional question as to whether the special counsel was properly appointed. She read the tea leaves and quickly came out with this decision, finessing the whole case as far as she was concerned. I haven't read the decision, but I've read reviews of the decision by various people, some pro, some con. The people who, most of the legal scholars who review it suggest that it wasn't well written or well conceived. I guess Clarence Thomas should have given her more instruction other than simply the hint of where she could go on this. A lot of people think it's going to be appealed. It's already been announced that it would be appealed. But I think the whole thing will be moot in terms of it affecting Donald Trump if Donald Trump gets elected.
Well, you know, Sandy, at the root of it, many thought that this would somehow have a major impact prior to the election of, you know, former President Donald Trump. And there were people who were counting on this, especially Democrats. They thought this was that I got you moment. And so if this did not, you know, do anything to, you know, I got you, where do the Democrats go now? Because they were counting on this.
Well, I think the whole litigation, all of these various litigations have obviously not damaged Donald Trump. He's gone through this. He's gone into this spurious conspiracy theory that it was all orchestrated from the White House. I don't think Georgia, the prosecutor in Georgia, was orchestrated. I think plenty of prosecutors saw the opportunity themselves to bring the prosecution, and did. And the prosecutions now the special counsel prosecution, which is a federal prosecution, will undoubtedly be put to sleep by Donald Trump if he gets elected. So when Eileen Cannon had made it clear through her motion decisions that this thing wasn't going to get tried before the election. And so this most recent decision throwing it out, I suppose, makes it very clear that it won't be, but I don't think it really changes what the course of action would have been.
You know, it for all the world appears that the stars are aligning with former President Donald Trump. Am I just imagining that?
I mean, there's no question in my mind that, the sun, the moon, the stars have lined up in an unusual way. I mean, it's incredible to think that an assassination attempt could make a big difference, but I think it will make a big difference in terms of the what the leaners in the United States might be thinking or how they'll react. There's a lot of water to still go under the bridge in this campaign, and we shall see. But like I said, Johnny Cash is the timber in his voice, the sort of somber timber, sort of how I feel today.
You know, Sandy, it's for the life of me, it's almost surreal, right? You know, 4 years ago, Donald Trump, as then President Trump, losing that election, re-election, and the American people spoke clearly, right?
Well,
it wasn't even close.
And the January 6th event and what everyone said within days of the January 6th event and everyone basically distancing themselves from this person who had participated in what was clearly such a violent kind of a process that was contrary to the Constitution. And somehow all of that has gone into a distant memory and has become part of a legacy that seems to make Donald Trump stronger this time than he's certainly stronger going into this election than he was going into the 2016 election when he was viewed as and also ran that came from behind.
You know, Senator, as we talk about bringing our nation together, that's easier said than done, right?
Well,
I mean, it clearly is easier said than done.
Well, I think it has to be more than eyewash and has to be given more than lip service, okay? And my sense is that right now, particularly from the right, all of the talk about it is eyewash and lip service. I want to see it happen. I want to see less of of them and us. I want to see less of talk about elites and the danger posed by amorphous characters like millions of immigrants who are supposedly, you know, the hyperbole that we have come to in this campaign, and most of the hyperbole, I will say, and I will accuse Donald Trump of introducing it, comes from him and his campaign. And we've got to get hyperbole out because it's hyperbole that's inflammatory. When we stick to the facts and we talk about policy, it's pretty hard to get so angry.
You know, Sandy, it is more than frustrating as you kind of look down this rabbit hole over the next several months that is going to lead to, you know, whomever is going to be the president of the United States. But clearly, we are at a trajectory, and we've said this, and you hear it over and over and over, how important elections are and how important this election is. This one especially, because of what's at stake. We can say that. They said that with Obama and Trump. You know, they said that with Trump and
Biden.
Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Sure. I mean, every election, as far as the people running in the election are concerned, is the most important one ever. But this one smacks of being truly very important. That policy differences are very distinct and very remarkable, and the policies that are being proposed by the conservatives are really quite revolutionary. They would call them revolutionary themselves. They do in the Project 2025 document that proposes much of them. And so we should understand that, number one, our country isn't broken, okay? If you look at all the data, and we shouldn't necessarily be going to radical fixes to fix what ain't broken, okay? That's the old... and I'm afraid that what we've got is someone proposing radical fixes, claiming that something's broken, our country, when it's not. And I'm afraid this is all kind of frantic, the frantic calls of a group of people who are potentially losing their grip on power, a party that hasn't won the head count in terms of the plurality in a presidential election for 24 years, and a party that can see demographics and the policy differential between them and the people widening.
So, Sandy, the full impact of the differences that we're talking about are not only Democrat to Republican, it's Republican to Republican. And so the Republican Party that we once knew has morphed. And I think that's why the impact is so much more profound in this, Sandy, because the Republican Party that everybody once knew is not that party anymore.
Well, yeah, the Republican Party has not been a protectionist party in the past. Now it's it used to be a free trade party. It used to be a fiscal party that stood for fiscal soundness. There's no demonstration of that in Trump's first administration. I mean, it's migrated a great deal. It was the party of civil rights, okay? It can't certainly be accused of that anymore. It has changed dramatically, and you can see the people who were those kinds of Republicans, Mitt Romney, for instance, but most of them have simply, Paul Ryan, most of them have vacated the party.
Well, of all things, Mitch McConnell, who a few years ago was canonized by Republicans, Mitch McConnell, of all people, he got up on the stage and got booed yesterday. That just goes to show you how big a change, Sandy, the Republican Party has undergone. So why did they boo Mitch McConnell?
Well, I think it has to do with that brown nose situation. Mitch McConnell has not always, you know, he has towed the line remarkably frequently, okay, much more frequently than I would have hoped a man of his stature would have done. But it hasn't been 100%, okay? And apparently 100% loyalty is what is required to be a MAGA Republican.
You know, that 100% loyalty to anybody smacks as, you know, something that's dangerous. Nobody's right about everything. There is no perfect Democrat. There is no perfect Republican.
Well, you know what happens to lemmings?
Lemmings, where they all go off the cliff.
They all go off the cliff. Yeah. You know, you shouldn't blindly follow somebody unless you know for sure that person has got the right directions in mind.
So, Sandy, how do you possibly, looking down the road, bring it back into focus if you're the Lincoln Project? And you're watching this, and you know that there's nothing you can do with all the power that they have. Those folk who are in the Lincoln Project aren't the average everyday Joes. They're prominent, but they are losing more and more of their gravitas in the Republican Party daily.
Well, I think one of the truisms is that if you don't take advice, you're gonna learn by the school of hard knocks. You're gonna injure yourself and find out what you shouldn't have been doing. And I'm afraid that's unfortunately the path that the Republican Party might be going on. And if we elect this person, it's the path that the national government and our country is going to go on, which is we're going to learn by the school of hard knocks, which is the most difficult and painful way to learn.
So, Sandy, is it safe to say that Donald Trump has now all of a sudden, you know, seen the light? You know, he survived this assassination, and now Donald Trump and all the things that he has been saying prior to that, that now all of a sudden he's changed his stripes, and now Donald Trump wants to be able, you know, to build relationships with both Democrats and Republicans. Let's all sing Kumbaya. Do you think that's the new Donald Trump?
I have no reason to believe that. You know, and I unfortunately don't have much reason to hope for that. But, you know, we shall see.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host Sandy Williams, and you hang on the phone lines.
Who are all of these dear friends scattered like dry leaves? The radio said they were just deportees.
Adios, amigo. Adios, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo. Jesús y María. No tendrán nombre en aquel aeroplano. All they van a poner.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side. Oh, when times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled waters, I will lay me down.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of a very, you know, really great Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, my co-host Sandy Williams is here, and Sandy is just, you know, man, great music.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, he's got messages for everyone, and this isn't his writing, obviously, and the guy who wrote it has a better voice than Johnny, but I thought he could deliver the message. We need to build that bridge, because we definitely have troubled waters, and I'm worried that maybe we aren't going to accomplish it.
Let's go to Eric from Tulsa. Eric's always got something great to say. Hey, good morning to you, Eric. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. First question is, like, does that Johnny Cash guy write any of his own stuff? That's just a joke. Just a joke. That's a joke. Anyways, I'd like to say that, you know, the two guys hosting this morning haven't really brought it up much, but the number one issue this fall is going to be Roe v. Wade. And the fact that women, and I'm not talking about leftist or Democratic women, but women are going to come out in droves. And J.D. Vance put him a step or two back in this instance, because he has deemed abortion care murder. This is all in the last couple of years. He's softening it, of course, because they recognize it's political suicide. But he has called it murder. He has said no exceptions for rape and incest very recently. He's very anti-choice, and he actually kind of entertained the idea of the police or other law enforcement people tracking menstrual cycles. He was in on that little gamut that they had going on for a minute. He's pro-Putin. You know, a lot of his speaking is anti, you talked about this, not concerned about Ukraine, et cetera, which is basically saying, you know, he's been influenced. But the pro-choice thing, or anti-choice, I should say, on J.D. Vance is going to hammer them. Like I said, he didn't. It's a detriment, not a positive, to the whole campaign. Now, one thing I'd like to say really quick, I'm sorry, to Tom and other people that are playing Chicken Little. Now, I don't mean to call Tom a Chicken Little, but the whole idea of this being our last election, Germany votes. Germany has a stronger democracy than we do today. Now, I don't know how many people here want to go through a Holocaust to get to the point that Germany's at today, but the idea that we're never going to have an election again is kind of silly, to be honest with you. And not picking on Tom, I promise. But again, the last thing is, you know, Judge Cannon was a plant. It's worked to perfection to this point. The appeals will come in. She'll get slapped by the 11th. But unfortunately, it's going to go back to SCOTUS, and they're all going to come around, obviously, because they see this possibility happening in the fall. But I'm warning folks, do not underestimate the power of women this fall, because they all understand what's at stake. It's not just abortion. It's everything to do with bodily autonomy, and it's going to come in like a wave this fall. And I'm going to be out there supporting it, and I hope everyone that enjoys living the way we're living today is as well. Thank you very much.
You know, Eric, man, you always have profound things to say. You are absolutely correct. Sandy, you know, the abortion thing is not, you know, hasn't been talked about much. There are all these other things, but Eric is absolutely correct.
Well, he's right, and Donald Trump is running away from that issue, holding his nose and declaring it a stink bomb, you know, because he knows what the problems are associated with his base and what it is they want from him associated with abortion. We should all remember, you know, what Walker did to Wisconsin with respect to Act 10, came out of the weeds, never talked about it during a campaign, and then did what he did. The same is true of Donald Trump. You know, he's avoiding talking about any of the hard policies. This is going to be, you know, his last swan song. He can't constitutionally at least run for reelection again. And so what he's going to do when he gets in office is going to have almost nothing to do with what he says on the campaign trail, because like he's said a number of times, sometimes thinking his mic is off and other times knowing that it's on, which is, look, I do what I do so I can get elected. After I get elected, we'll see, you know? And that's what we're dealing with here, is someone who is going to do anything to get elected. He's going to run away from the abortion issue. He's going to say he knows nothing about Project 2025. It's the same way that he's denied his involvement with any and all of the various scandals that I didn't know her. I never met him. I don't know who that is. I don't know who these Ukrainian guys are working for Giuliani. I'm not, you know, it's all his capacity to have deniability. And it doesn't even require credible deniability, apparently, for Donald Trump. It just allows him to be someone who can deny whatever. And he denies things that he says on tape. And the issues seem to go away.
Well, you know, Gary said it best. I like the guy because he's a fighter. So people say they like him because he's a fighter, whatever that means. You know, he's never going to admit.
Yeah, my theory is that the American public finds shameful things that people do secretly and get caught. But if you do them openly and notoriously, it doesn't have that same shameful quality to it as far as the American people are concerned. And there's no question that Donald Trump lives his life openly and notoriously. And for all the shameful things, for all the things he's done and been involved with that others would be accused of being shameful, he's Teflon man. And the reason is that you can't shame the shameless. And his version of fighting is just essentially defying the law openly and notoriously. And it doesn't seem in that case to be quite so criminal.
All right. I want to thank you, Sandy, as always, for a great show. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin, Jane Matner, and Greg Bach. Going to be down at the Republican RNC. So is Maggie Dunn, and so is Todd Alba. They'll all be broadcasting live from the RNC. I'll be down hanging out, you know, talking with some folk and doing some other things. But thank everybody who took the time out. I hope you enjoyed the show. See you guys on tomorrow when we'll be joined by Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, on the Earl Ingram Show.
Silly.
on, silver girl. Sail on by. Your time has come to shine.